Hello, and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned the closed door buttons in elevators do nothing, and they've been doing nothing for decades. In 1990, the government passed the Americans with Disabilities Act, which required the elevator doors remain open long enough for anyone who uses crutches, a cane, or a wheelchair to get inside. So now the doors are required to remain open for at least 3 seconds, and nothing could get in the way of that. So the closed door button had to go. Well, technically they remain, but since 1990, they've been systematically rendered obsolete. Though there's probably a few elevator buttons out there that have escaped the snip. But as for the rest, merely placebos. Know what else is a placebo? Crosswalk signs. As the New York Times reminds us, in New York City, at least, officials deactivated most pedestrian buttons long ago as traffic signals became computer controlled. New York City has approximately 3,000 walk buttons, and there are only 120 working ones. And actually, the same is probably true for most other cities, since they too run on computer-controlled traffic lights. In fact, in a 2010 survey of crosswalk buttons in Austin, Texas, Gainesville, Florida, and Syracuse, New York, there was only one functioning crosswalk button in the whole of those three cities. This week I learned the best motivation to get you to the gym. It turns out it's not having a supportive group of gym buddies that inspire you to sweat. It's a cutthroat, competitive atmosphere. In a new study published in the journal Preventive Medicine Reports, a group of almost 800 students from the University of Pennsylvania were put through an 11-week exercise program. They were offered varying classes from running and spinning to yoga, Pilates, and weightlifting. The competitive group only saw each other in the class. They weren't allowed to chit-chat outside, but they were allowed to track their team's exercise progress. As for the individual folks, well, they either worked out alone, without any social network, or they had access to information about how they were doing compared to others. Winners were determined by how many classes they or their team attended. And researchers found that being in a team had no effect on how many workouts each person did. But across the board, a competitive atmosphere encouraged people to work out more. Actually, it was a huge boost. People in the competitive groups went to 90% more classes than those who weren't. And actually, it turns out having the social support groups was worse than having nothing at all. Basically, in the competitive groups, the most fit person draws the most attention, which basically brings everyone else's activity levels up as they want to be more or better than her. But in the social buddy system, the laziest person is the one who draws the most attention and therefore brings everyone else down, basically giving everyone else an excuse not to exercise. So if you're going to the gym, don't make friends. This week I learned that a feeling of disgust can boost your confidence. This is a curious study out of the University of London. It had a group of people perform a task. They were watching a screen of dots moving in varied directions. The volunteers were asked which directions most of the dots were moving in, and then how confident they felt about their decision. But before the dot task began, participants were very briefly shown a picture of a face on the screen. It was either twisted in disgust or it was neutral. When the volunteers saw the disgust face and then had to take on a difficult dot task, their confidence actually grew. What's interesting is that the disgust face gave volunteers a physical reaction. Their heart rates increased and their pupils dilated, which are all signs of alertness. And researchers think this alertness is the key to the confidence result. You see, disgust is a powerful evolutionary sign of danger. So in the more complicated dot task, volunteers were able to ignore the stimulus of the task and focus on their own gut and confidence. Scientists admit that there's more to discover, like if it's just disgust that has this effect, or if other emotions like fear or anger, which also elicit alertness, could also be a quick boost of confidence. This week I learned that marijuana may enhance your night vision. Over the years, there's been some anecdotal evidence pointing to marijuana's ability to improve how a person sees in the dark. Jamaican fishermen who either smoke cannabis or drink rum made from the leaves and stems of the plant have been able to navigate the treacherous coral reefs in the pitch black of night as well as if they were fishing in the light of day. But a new study published in the Journal of eLife may finally prove this for good. Researchers tested how cannabis affects the eyesight of tadpoles of the African clawed toad. Scientists applied a synthetic cannabinoid to the tadpole's eye tissue and then used teeny tiny electrodes to measure how one part of the eye responds to light. Specifically, they were looking at the cells that form the optic nerve. What they found was that cannabis suppressed a particular type of protein that shuffles, among other things, chloride ions in and out of the optic nerve cells. Without a concentration of these chloride ions, the optic nerve was excitable and more sensitive to light. But the question still remained, did these cellular responses contribute to vision? So scientists tested tadpoles with and without the cannabis treatment under normal light conditions and low light conditions. And they found that the cannabis did in fact improve the tadpole's vision in the dark. Now, of course, the physiology of transparent tadpoles is a far cry from that of humans, but the findings certainly give the night vision abilities of those stoned fishermen in Jamaica a little more scientific weight. And that does it for this week's episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episode every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to read more about any of the facts I've mentioned or check out the rest of the week's podcasts, including 7-Minute Explainers and 7-Minute Opinions, head on over to theweek.com/podcasts. And if you like what you hear, subscribe, tell a friend, or give us a rating or review on iTunes. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thanks so much for listening.